Goodbye, LA.
What's going on, you guys? Welcome to my blue thoughts. I thought the song would be fitting. Sorry, Randy Newman.
Lots of stars, plenty of cars.
What's going on, you guys? Welcome to my blue thoughts. NLDS edition. I actually meant to, I had every intention on putting the podcast out before the series started. Had some travel issues going to Tampa this past weekend. I ended up missing a flight and getting in late. And then I broke my SD card, and so I just didn't get to do it Thursday. Once the series started, and then I came back on Monday, and it's just a whole thing. But anyway, welcome to My Blue Thoughts. My name is Peter Sears. I am a comedian. I am a lifelong Dodger fan. And I just wanted to obviously wrap it up because I didn't get to do a preview for the series. I guarantee you I wouldn't have predicted that our Dodgers would get swept and embarrassed by an Arizona team that not only barely made the playoffs, but that they absolutely dominated throughout the regular season. fucking, where do I start, dude? You know where I'll start? I'll start with this. These are my blue thoughts. You know, one of the things that, and I've talked about it a million times on this podcast, if you're new here, welcome. If you've been listening since the beginning, this is the seventh season that we've been doing this. It started as a YouTube vlog, and then we moved it over to podcast form. It was on SoundCloud at first, and then we finally figured out how we could get it up everywhere else. And, you know, I've met some people, you know, I know some of you guys listen online and whatever, and some of you guys are actually friends with me. You know, some of you guys know all these things, but I'm just going to recap really quick, like, and then we'll get into things. And all of my memories of going to just, no, not even that. All of my childhood memories, like, I think back to my childhood, and the one thing that I remember the most and the most vividly is going to Dodger games, going to Dodger Stadium. You know, with my mom and my grandma, getting there early for batting practice, I guess, which is odd because our seats were in the reserve section, so it wasn't like we were getting anything in the reserve section, but my mom and my grandma loved it, and I loved it. You know, I had my little uniform on, you know, with Sears in the back and my little glove, and there's, I don't know if I can ever get my hands on one, but there's this cool pictures of me as a kid. I have, like, one. But there's, like, a whole bunch of them with me in a Dodger uniform, and, like, those are my memories, man. Like, you know, I remember, I have a memory of, you know, being in kindergarten and being able to write, not only write and spell it correctly. Yes, I knew how to spell in kindergarten, but, like, a pretty good indication of what the starting lineup was. You know, Steve Sachs leading off and Greg Brock. Maybe he was the cleanup hitter, but like Steve Yeager, Mike Socha, you know, Pedro Guerrero, Bill Russell. Like, I was able to write all these guys' names down and they got a kick out of that. But like, I just knew that I loved going to Dodger games. And, you know, like we talked about last week, I think, our last podcast, but like, no, actually, no, this wasn't my Dodger podcast. This was an actual conversation I had with a person. But, you know, I grew up, you know, we lived in East LA for quite a while, and my grandma's house where we lived was right on the hill, Boyle Heights. When the lights are on at Dodger Stadium, you could see the lights. And when there's fireworks at Dodger Stadium, you could see the fireworks. And, you know, I didn't grow up, a lot of us didn't grow up in an era where baseball was on TV. Like, you couldn't watch every game on television. You got maybe a couple a week. If they were on the road, you got a couple more. You never got home games, really. Home games was not a thing, unless it was an ESPN game or, like, ABC or whatever used to do, like, Baseball Night in America. I think it probably switched networks, but, like, you didn't get a lot of home games. At some point in my childhood, I remember, like, there was a station that had the Dodger games. It was before Prime Ticket. It was something else. It was, like, extra. It was called, like, the Z Channel or something. You can fucking Google that. So we didn't get a lot. So my point was, as a kid, I grew up going to games with my grandmother and my mom, two of the most important women in my life. But I also grew up listening to Vince Scully on the radio. You know, we didn't, like I said, we didn't have the luxury of watching all the games on TV, so we listened. And so, you know, I love baseball, as you guys all know. But I grew up around it. Like, my best childhood memories are of being there. But also, like, I got taught the game of baseball by Vin Scully, the best announcer of all time. Like, getting to listen to his, you know, call and description of the games and, you know, just painting the perfect picture, which, as a kid, like, of course I fell in love with baseball. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm listening to my grandfather, like, because, you know, we talked about it, but Vin, for a lot of us, is our grandfather. My grandfather in East L.A. that we lived with didn't speak English, so he wasn't talking to me about baseball. I learned it from Vin Scully, and who better to learn about, you know, the legends of the past, you know, players like Jackie Robinson and Duke Snyder and Gil Hodges and, you know, Pee Wee Reese and Don Drysdale and Sandy Koufax and, like, these people that are legends in our minds. I feel like, as Dodger fans, they're legends because we grew up hearing about their greatness from Vin Scully. And so it's like, that's what I grew up with, you know. So, like, I fell in love with baseball. I remember, you know, I don't know why, but I remember several occasions where, like, the power would go out for whatever reason, like, in the neighborhood, probably because it was a poor neighborhood, and we would be with candlelight, you know, but we would have that radio and be listening to Vin Scully call Dodger games. Like, you know, when I tell you guys I love the Dodgers and I love baseball, it's more than just, you know, they're the local team. It's been a part of my life, like, my entire life. You know, I talk about going to my first Dodger game when I was 5 weeks old. You know, I talk about my mom telling me that I was at, you know, a World Series game when I was in her stomach, you know, or she told my grandmother that she was pregnant at a Dodger game. You know, and the Dodgers were good in the 80s, or, I mean, I guess this had been the 70s, but they were good in the 70s too, you know? And so, I don't remember the exact story, but I know they're at the Dodger game. The Dodgers are doing well. Someone hit a home run, and everyone's celebrating. Use the other one. There's another one there. You know, she told my grandmother that she was pregnant with me, and, like, I always remembered that story. Yeah, I'm a little emotional right now. And then, you know, I remember, you know, us moving out to Ontario. And, you know, as an adult, you know, as an irresponsible adult, I always find a way to, you know, to go to games as much as possible once I became an adult and I was able to go by myself, you know. But, you know, I get it. Like, you know, we weren't rich, you know, far from it. Probably closer to poor than rich, I guess, growing up. So I think once we moved to Ontario, like, maybe we went to a game a year. Like, there was always, like, a Little League day, and then we would all go, and maybe another one. And I would always go stay with my grandma, like in the summertime, and I would be like, can we go to a Dodger game? Like, I always, so I mean, maybe I got to go to two or three, but I always listened, even as a kid. You know, I always listened on the radio and watched when they were on TV. And, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, depending on how old you are and whatnot, but, you know, the Dodgers used to have before the games, like, kind of like, I don't know, Dodger demos, I think it was called or something, where, like, the players, different players would come and they would teach you different things. And I learned a lot of really important tips from baseball by watching those things, like, stuff that my dad, because he wasn't really a baseball player. He wasn't a baseball player. He ran track and played football, even though he coached me in Little League. He wasn't, you know, when you coach kids, it's more just about, you know, teaching them the basics. And maybe when you get to be a little bit, you know, like 9, 10, 11-year-old range, like, you can kind of start, you know, making a strategy and whatnot. But, you know, when they're 5, 6, 7, 8, you're just trying to fucking get them to pay attention. But hey, the game's over here. Hey, the ball's hit right to you. Like, run, or, you know what I mean? Like, but I learned, like, I can tell you, I learned how to crow hop from Brett Butler. So that would have been 1990, 91, somewhere around there. Because, you know, when I played Little League, I was a shortstop. I was shortstop and pitcher, because that's the position that you play when you're the best athlete on the field. And for the most part, I was the best athlete on the field, or at least on my team, you know. So I always played shortstop. So it wasn't until right around when I, you know, really, really, like, you know, when I was a kid, I just watched baseball because I loved it, you know. And then when I got to the point, you know, say like 10, 11, 12, I started watching and, you know, copying things. You know, like, one of the things I remember, I was one of the first kids to do a pop-up slide, you know. And I think I started when I was like 12. Like, oh, who taught you that? I'm like, I watched baseball. You know, I used to love Eric Davis. He was my favorite player until Griffey came along. And he would always pop-up slide. And it was the coolest fucking thing to watch, dude. And I taught myself how to do it. I watched Brett Butler teach me how to crow hop, and I learned how to run through the ball and crow hop. You know, I remember watching Mike Socha teach us how to throw a runner out, even though he didn't throw a lot of runners out. He was more known for blocking the plate and calling a good game. But, you know, how to not really just shift your feet and throw, like, don't take a step, you know. You go to Little League games, you see kids, like, they catch, and it's a long throw for them, you know. It's the longest throw, unless you're throwing from the outfield. You know, they gear up, they take a step or two, and it's like, I learned to just catch and release, dude. And, you know, I played catcher when I got to, like, when I was 13, but that was when I really started playing outfield, because, like I said, Eric Davis was my favorite player. Griffey was around at that point. Kind of coming into his own. So all my favorite players played outfield. I wanted to start playing outfield. And so I would shift between catcher, shortstop, and center field, obviously, which I eventually settled down in. But my point was, is as a kid, I would always watch the games as much as I could. And if I couldn't watch it, I was listening. And I just have memories like that, you know. And I think as a native Angeleno and someone who's lived here basically my whole life, minus the year I spent in Oklahoma, and being Mexican and being, you know, from here and living in East LA when I was a kid, and then when I became an adult living there for a while, and there's definitely a deeper connection between the Mexican fans, the Chicanos in LA, but and the, you know, so the, I don't know if you guys know this, but Chicano means that you're of Mexican descent, but you were born here. So that would be me. I'm Mexican, but I'm also Chicano. You can be Chicano. You can be Mexican, but not be Chicano. Because if you're from Mexico, you're not. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, maybe a deeper connection than any other. You know, maybe other, you know, Latinos as well. You know, there's a lot of other Latinos in LA, obviously. Guatemalans, Salvadorians, you know, everybody, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, you know, you get it, Dominican. It's a big fabric of the fandom in LA, is us, and we love it, and sometimes maybe a little too much, you know. I can tell you as a person that is invested in every game, and like I said, you know, it's gotten harder and harder to keep up with watching all of every game, because one, it's 162 games, dude. That's, you know, 500 plus hours, more than that, of television. Plus you're watching the post game or maybe the pregame, and it's just, it's a lot of time invested. And time that I used to have, and now I don't have as much. I still watch as much baseball as I can. You know, I was in Tampa this weekend watching the game while I was literally, my first big headline weekend was this past weekend in Tampa. The most I've ever been paid for a comedy job, headlining a club that I didn't start at as an MC. Like I don't know if you guys just realize like the significance of that in someone's career, but it's a pretty big milestone. The fact that a lot of clubs, you know, unless you're famous, which I'm not, so it's what's why it's such a crazy feat for me. You know, I've started at as an MC making shit and then being the middle act, which is what I still do a lot, but getting paid shit, but a little bit more than shit, to working your way up to headliner. And I've done that at a few clubs. Some of the clubs that I did it at have now closed because of COVID and whatnot, so that's a nice fun gut punch. But you know, this is a club that I got on my own. Nobody referred me, nobody nothing, and I got to headline, and it was really cool. A lot more people came out to my shows this weekend than did when I was headlining in Oregon a couple weeks ago, but that one wasn't my fault because I wasn't the headliner originally that was scheduled. It was another guy, so he was on all the posters and everything, so I'm going with that's why nobody came, but whatever. So the point being, it was a big weekend for me, but in between shows, like, I put on the game, and I was stressed out because I didn't want to be, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, but, you know, I started doing stand-up in 2012, right before the Dodgers went on this run, and so that first summer, you know, I, you know, fell in love with stand-up. I know, I'll get back to the baseball. It's in there. I fell in love with stand-up, but the Dodgers weren't in the playoffs. Like, they were good. They made that run. They went out and got, you know, Nick Punto and why am I drawing a blank? Josh Beckett and Carl Crawford, and obviously Adrian Gonzalez. Am I missing somebody? Well, we got five guys. You guys were like, it's so-and-so. I had it in my mind. Nick Punto, Adrian Gonzalez, Josh Beckett, Carl Crawford. There's one more, wasn't there? God damn it, I'm forgetting who it was. I'm sorry, you guys, I'm sorry. But anyway, they made a run that came up like a couple games out that season. But that kind of laid the groundwork and showed that this front office group was going to go out. And they said it then, you know, we're going to go out and try to get some guys to compete this year, but we're not going to, because they took over the team like in April or May of that year. They didn't even start the season as the actual owners. Major League Baseball had to step in, if you remember. You know, they said they were going to go out and get some guys that they thought could help them compete now, but without mortgaging the future. And that was guys like, you know, like Jock, like Corey, like fucking Cody, like Julio Urias, like, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of those guys. And, you know, they were right. You know, they made it. You know, there's a couple years there. You know, I still feel like if Hanley doesn't get hit in the ribs against the Cardinals, you know, the Dodgers win that fucking series because he was unhittable. But, like, it's just, it's one thing after another, you know. But my point is that first year in stand-up, the Dodgers weren't in the playoffs, so it was fine. But then the next year, I kind of started going on the road. And, you know, beggars can't be choosers, but in my mind, I was like, I don't want to be on the road if the Dodgers are in the playoffs, because I want to be able to go to as many of the playoff games. And I've been to a lot of playoff games, you guys. Like, a lot. Then I started working more and more, and it was like, okay, well, maybe I'll work at the beginning of October. And I won't, like, I don't know if you guys noticed, but my calendar isn't up anywhere, but, like, I never go on the road the last 2 weeks of October, because I want to be here for when there's potential playoff games, and especially now that they're so good. They've been so good for so long. We kind of expect them to make it to the World Series, even though they haven't since COVID and whatever. I've kind of dictated a lot of my life based around, you know, watching the games and being at games and whatnot. But, you know, over the last couple years, and especially this year, it got a lot harder with, you know, just watching as many games as I could, even though I'm always in tune. Like, I'm always keeping track of them, but like, I was on the road so many times this year. But anyway, my point is, I have another point. This is my biggest headlining weekend of my career, and I was still needing to watch the Dodgers in between shows. And then in the half hour between shows from 9 to 9:30, because I was on the East Coast, Clayton Kershaw goes up and gives up fucking 6 runs. And I'm like, well, now I don't have to be fucking stressed out on stage worrying about what the Dodgers are going to do, you know. Because I don't know if you guys remember, but there was the year they won the World Series. I was working that weekend. That was my first feature weekend at Laughs in Tucson. And I was so nervous because it was my first feature weekend. But two, the Dodgers were in that game, the game where they made that fucking crazy ass play to end the game where Chris Taylor bobbled it. And then Austin Barnes, the Barnes or Will Smith, I don't even remember, but like, he bobbled it. And then the Rays scored, and it was just fucking crazy. So I was on the road, but I made sure I didn't schedule myself the last, you know, week of October. But I mapped it out. But now it's just like, fuck, dude, like, I can't. I guess I just, from now on, will just not work the last week of October. I'll leave it at that, because it's just, I have a career now. It's not a good one, but it's a career, and it's something that I love just as much as baseball now, I guess, if not more, because I'm doing it like almost every day, or doing something for it every single day. And that's why I wanted to tell you guys that this is the final My Blue Thoughts podcast ever. I thought about ending it when they won the World Series. I was like, well, cool, we're done, you know. That the post World Series episode was the most downloaded episode ever. Got like hundreds and hundreds of downloads, not thousands, but that's okay. But like, I'm like, I should have just finished it then. But, you know, I kept going because I was not in LA for that season, and I couldn't wait to come back and be back in it. But you guys, I'm on the road so much that, and my career is at a point where I don't think I can give you guys the best Dodger podcast anymore with the demands of my schedule. And maybe that'll change. You know, maybe I'll blow up this year and have way more time and way more money and not have to be on the road all the fucking time. But maybe there's something in the middle. I don't know, but this is the last one. I know that some of you guys have been listening from the beginning. Some of you guys have come along at some point. But as you guys know, I think I talked about, but I'm also moving to Austin soon. I just actually was supposed to have moved there by now, and I just, yeah, trying to save up money. It's hard. But combination of that and me not being here again, like, and being 2 hours ahead, you know, so having to stay up past midnight every night, I don't think I can, if that's the case, I'm going to be able to give you the best Dodger podcast. And I took pride in the fact that I knew my shit and that I could speak not only from a place of passion, but from a place of expertise. And I still know baseball, you know. I still fucking hate nerdball. I think the Dodgers, I mean, ultimately they just fucking choked. You know, we have these guys that are making $200 and $300 million who we all love, who are some of the best players in the game. But 2 years in a row, they've choked. I'm talking about Mookie and Freddie. But it takes a team, but hitting is contagious. They all choked. You had 4 guys with 100 RBIs this season, and between the 4 of them, there's 1 RBI. You have a guy that hit 310 with 39 home runs, and you have a guy that hit 339 with 28 home runs, 29 home runs. And between the two of them, they had one hit. You hit a .143 with runners in scoring position against a team that you beat 11 out of 15. OPS of 454. Runs per game 1.3. I don't care what level you're playing baseball at. You can't win ball games, especially playoff games, scoring 1.3. Like, Sandy Koufax isn't pitching fucking shutout every game like he did in 1963. He pitched, was it 63 or 65? One of those, he won three games in the World Series, and most of them were complete games. Maybe all of them, you know? Probably, like, no rest in between games like they do now, you know? I don't know, I wasn't fucking alive back then. But I know he won three games in that World Series. And, you know, I went through a lot of a roller coaster of emotions this season. Number one roller coaster, you know, was coming from the off season, coming into the season, knowing that the front office kind of, I don't want to say mortgaged this season, but kind of, so they could reset the luxury tax and go out and get fucking Shohei Ohtani. And my thought behind that was like, fuck that, dude. This is probably Clayton's last year. We'll get into that in a second. We need to win now. Like, these guys, I talked about it, you know, years ago when the Nationals shelved Steven Strasburg when they were in the playoffs that one year because it was one year removed from Tommy John. And they didn't want to risk his future, so they fucking shelled him. And then they end up going five games with the Giants and really needing that fucking arm there. And then they didn't see the World Series again for, 8 years? And then they won one. They won one. But they could have won two, at least. You know, they'll never know. And so it's like, why are we putting back to next year when this is potentially, probably, Clayton's last Kershaw, or Clayton's last season, at least his last season in a Dodger uniform? I watched the press conference after the game, and he's kind of like me, but leaning more towards he didn't want to say it in that setting, you know, because he probably doesn't want to take any attention away from the team. But if he's not retiring, he's not going to be a Dodger next year. I think he retires. Because it's if he can still play and compete at the level that he wants to, then I think he still stays a Dodger. Clayton, to me, is like Kobe. Like, even though the Lakers were not good his last year, for sure, but maybe the last couple years, in his mind, because he's the fucking Mamba, he thought, this team is not good. In fact, they might be shit. Fucking, you know, LeVar Ball and whatever, you know, like, this team might be shit, but because I'm Kobe, I can still win. I guarantee you he thought that, because he wouldn't play, and when he realized he couldn't do that, that's when he walked away. And I think Kershaw's the same way. I don't see him coming back and playing with the Rangers just to say goodbye and play in his hometown. I can't see it, but I wouldn't be surprised. You know, there is always money, and even though he's got hundreds of millions, there's always potential. But in that press conference, he couldn't comment on it. He wasn't sure. And that, to me, is, it sounded different than it had in years past. So I think we've seen Clayton's last start as a Dodger. Now, with that being said, we should all be so lucky that we got to fucking watch Clayton Kershaw, one of the best pitchers to ever play in Major League Baseball. I was listening to something the other day, and it was 50,000 people have played Major League Baseball. that like that's it in the history. It's like 50,000. And of the 50,000, think about the millions that play, you know, Little League to, you know, Pony and American Legion and Travel Ball now and high school and then college and then minor leagues. And it's not a lot of people, man. But we got to see a guy who has one of the best ERAs in the history of pitching. Record, you know, because we live and play, or I don't play, but, you know, they play in a different era. You're not going to see as many wins now, but 210 wins, 92 losses. Oh, shit, I lost my place. And I'm looking at the number right here. I knew it by heart, but I don't anymore because I have a million other things going on. It's hard to keep track of these things in real time. 2,944 strikeouts, so a little bit short of 300. Now, here's what I know about Clayton Kershaw. Because he's so generous with his time and money in the off season, and, you know, helping build houses and probably donates a ton of money as well. You know, he's probably one of the best dudes ever. Like, I'd probably cry if I met him, just to thank him for everything he gave us. Because we got to witness something great. Like, there's a lot of fan bases that cannot, Padre fans can never be like, oh my God, you know, like, this is crazy. But, like, I saw David Wells. I mean, and now I, it was a sight. He's not one of the greats, you know. We got to see one of the greatest pitchers of all time in the history of baseball. We got to see him for 16 years. We got to watch him grow up. We got to watch him throw no-hitters and get fucking triple crowns. And, you know, the joy that he would have. And we loved him. He was our guy. Like, there's not a lot of teams. There's a lot of people that are homers, you know, root for their team no matter what, even though they know they, like, you know, like Brewers fans or, you know what I mean? Like, places where, like I've said, like, that I've been, where the fans are great, but the team is shitty, and you're like, this is just America, you know? There's a lot of places like that. LA's not one of them. I don't think I just made sense, but Kershaw is, oh, my point was that none of those cities can say, a lot of those cities can't say that they got to see one of the best players or pitchers of all time. And we got to see it for 16 years. And, you know, I'm glad he got the World Series, you know, because, you know, he, unfortunately he got cheated out of one. And, you know, he did have some postseason fucking implosions, including this season in game one. What the fuck, dude? Like, once Outman out dropped the first ball and I saw Clayton's body language, I knew that there was something off. You know, normally he's just like, fuck, dude, catch the fucking ball. But, like, whatever, I'm going to go out there and strike the next guy out. There was a look. If you go back in the replay, like, he made a face and said, hey, catch that fucking ball, dude, come on. But, like, and then he realized probably that he was doing it, and he, like, went back to game face mode Clayton Kershaw. But, you know, that's the reaction of someone that, like, knows he probably didn't have his best stuff, and it's going to be a battle out there anyway, and he needs all the help he can get, and then he didn't get the help. That's what I saw with that look. And I don't know if Clayton continues to pitch that way. Like, that's why I was talking about Kobe. Like, Kobe knew when it was time to walk away. Yeah, he dropped 60 on his last game, but, like, he knew he couldn't be Kobe Bryant anymore, so he left. Mamba out. And I think Clayton Kershaw, just knowing his competitive level, I don't think he could just go and do a farewell tour. Now, I'll say this. Rangers are in the fucking ALCS, which, you know, I kind of talked about how I wanted the fucking either the Rangers or the Astros to make the World Series. So if the Dodgers played them, I could go to, like, one of the games. So I'm going to be in Austin for a couple of days next week, and I could have just stayed and then gone up to Dallas or Houston. Fucking nope. They fucking ruined it again, dude. Just like last year when I had booked a gig at the end of October. One, to see my girl at the time because it was her birthday that weekend, but also so that I could be close enough to go down and watch them play the Astros. But my point was on that rant that, you know, Clayton going to Texas isn't just a, like, hey, you know, like, I'm coming home. Like, they might be legit next year. Like, they're going to have everybody come back minus a free agent or two, you know. But they've got a squad. They locked those guys up. Simeon, motherfucking our boy Seager, who's being Seager again. You think we didn't miss a clutch bat like Seager this postseason when our guys are hitting a buck fucking 43 as a team? You know, like I said, we went into this offseason not really going after guys, resetting the luxury tax. And then I thought, you know, we did go into the season with a great rotation, but I didn't like them just going in and putting it all on Lux when they could have fucking signed Trey Turner or Corey Seager the next year. You know, letting Cody go because Outman was on the way. I didn't like that. Fucking not signing somebody because Vargas is coming. Like, I mean, I liked it, but, like, they just didn't make any moves this offseason. And I trusted them because they seem to have something right. You know, I can't just say it's all shit. But I figured that once they went into the season and when they went into the season with the rotation they had a pretty good shot. And they did with that rotation. But I figured that they would, you know, see what happened and then go out and address whatever they needed at the trade deadline like they've done in the past when they got, you know, I mean, we can go back to Manny, you know, Ramirez, not fucking Machado, but then, you know, getting Machado, getting Trey Turner, getting Max Scherzer, like, going out, getting Jim, remember we had Jim Thome? Do you guys fucking remember that? The Dodgers went out and somehow convinced the Phillies to give Jim Thome to the Dodgers, but on top of giving Jim Thome to us, giving Jim Thome to us and then being like, but you're only going to pinch hit while you're here. Like, and he was like, yeah, sure. Like, what? Fucking Albert Pujols, you know, like, fucking guys that are fucking first ballot Hall of Famers that came just to do, you know, the minimum but contribute in some way to a World Series. They went out and got guys. They didn't do that in the offseason. They didn't do it at the trade deadline. So in my mind, they were never fully all in on this season. They were banking on Shohei, and that's a dangerous thing to do, especially with this embarrassing exit in the offseason. I mean, there's really, I'm looking at the teams that are in it still, Houston, Texas, fucking Arizona and Philly. It's not like, or I guess Atlanta's in it too right now, but Philly's up, obviously. Just think of all the guys that they haven't, Bryce Harper that they didn't sign. Like I said, Corey Seager they didn't sign. You think they couldn't use those bats in this series? They didn't go after it. They knew they were going to just do the bare minimum and see what happened. And they knew that no matter what, the fans would show up to the stadium. And that's exactly what they did. And then they figured out the metrics. And they got it to where they could win 100 games because they're really good at that. Nerdball is great for the regular season. Okay, it's proven. We got it. For over the course of a 162-game season, we got it. You ever seen Moneyball? Go back and watch it. Let me know how it ends. I'll tell you, the A's don't fucking win the World Series at the end of Moneyball. And you know what would happen if they made a sequel? They wouldn't fucking win the World Series because they haven't won a fucking World Series with Moneyball. Last time they won the World Series, they had fucking McGuire and Canseco juiced out of their fucking mind. They had Ricky Henderson stealing 100 bases and fucking pimping home runs, dude. They had the best closer, Dennis Eckersley. They had Dave Stewart fucking getting caught with hookers. You know that's why he when he was at the Dodgers, he got caught with a hooker. That's fucking hilarious, dude. Those guys, that was the last time Oakland made it to the World Series. Moneyball doesn't work in the postseason. In the postseason, you have to go with who's good. You got to go not with the fucking righty-lefty and bring in Austin fucking Barnes to pinch hit against the lefty because it's a matchup. You go with the guys that give you the best chance to win, whether it's righty-righty, lefty-lefty. I don't fucking care, dude. Nerdball doesn't work in the playoffs. You can't play a playoff game with a computer. You know why they won in 2020? Because everybody stayed healthy because it was only 60 games, dude. Yes, they had some crazy extraneous circumstances with everything they went through, but that was the perfect recipe for that team. Those guys were so good that none of that other stuff mattered. They were hot. They got hot at the right time. I don't know if you remember, but there was an extra round in the playoffs when they had the COVID year. There was a 2-out-of-3 series that they played at Dodger Stadium. Do you guys remember that? And then they went into the division series against San Diego and then the NLCS against the Braves. But there was a series. This playoff format, I'm not making excuses because at the end of the day, if they're not ready for the next series after having 5 days off, then they're not professionals. Like, bring in the minor leaguers, dude. Scrimmage the minor leaguers every day. You don't think they'd like that? You don't think that would keep you sharp to play a full game? You know, not just one fucking inter-squad game where you let fans come or whatever the fuck that was, dude. Fucking play all week, dude. Don't fucking use that as an excuse. They got embarrassed. They got swept by the fucking D-backs. Remember when the D-backs took 3 out of 4 against the Dodgers earlier this season and I was talking shit? They just fucking swept them out of the playoffs. Like, bad. There wasn't one game where I felt that the Dodgers were in it or they had a chance. Game 2, you know, they did rally back, and for a moment, but they were taking shitty swings the whole series. Swinging at balls. Non-fucking-stop, dude. Swinging at balls and not fucking producing. You know, all the people fire Robert, sure, someone's going to have to get fired because they have to make a statement at this point. He seems to be the fall guy. But if I'm a manager, unless they're going to fucking pay me bank, I don't want that job because I know I have to answer to the fucking nerds. Andrew Friedman is who should be fired. He's the one that didn't go out and get the people that they needed to get because he was trying to save money because he knew that Dodger fans would show up. Dodger fans number one in attendance, dude. And as long as we keep doing that, as a business, it's actually pretty genius. Make the team just good enough, crack the code to compete well enough to where your fans are coming because they're good. You're not putting you're putting a great product on the field for a 162 game season, but you're putting a really shitty product on the field when it comes to the postseason, and you're playing a team that's, you know, trying to bunt for hits and stealing bases and doing all the little things. And our guys are just fucking striking out and rolling over, rolling over, rolling over. It was fucking embarrassing, man. Like, I didn't feel, like I said, other than that, there was a moment in game 2 when I thought, okay, someone's going to hit this. The tying runs at the plate. They're going to tie it up and the series changes. After that, dude, like, they weren't in game 1 at all. And then there came a point in game 2 where I was like, yeah, I don't even feel a comeback here. And game 3, you know, Lance is giving up fucking home runs like, you know, he's Oprah Winfrey. You get a homer and you get a homer. And yeah, like, what the like the fact that our season after winning 100 games stood on the shoulders of a good Lance Lynn start tells you all you need to know about the fucking front office and the moves they made in the offseason and the season. Lance Lynn, major league leader in home runs, not in a good way, in a bad way. That's who we hung our season on. And they lost. And they lost. They got swept. Embarrassing. If I'm, like, I think last season was the most disappointing season because they were so good. And then after, you know, beating the Giants in 2021, like, that was pretty disappointing too because they were the second best team other than the Giants, and they beat the Giants. So it's like, all right, well, let's go. But that's three really, really disappointing endings to their season in a row. And before 2020, getting eliminated by the Nationals in the first round. Like, you're talking to a guy that thinks he's so fucking smart and he knows everything. That's a lot of first-round fucking exits, dude, for the fourth highest payroll in baseball. Where the fuck's that money going? Like, I don't understand. But I just know that it's... I'm not even sad this year because I told you guys early in the... I mean... They had us all bamboozled, you know, when they started playing well and they went on that fucking run, you know, in August, you know, was it like 24-3? It really got me believing, dude. I'm like, oh, they're scrappy. This is the team. But they never really went out and they went and did just enough to compete and make us think they were going to compete so that we would keep coming and we would keep buying tickets and they would keep fucking making money because they're number one in attendance because we're going to come, especially if they're good. And they were good. But they fucking choked in October, and I'm just done, dude. Like I said, Dave Roberts is probably going to be the one that gets fired. And I'm not a fire Roberts guy, but like you have to publicly show that this is fucking unacceptable. So it's either Roberts or Friedman. Maybe they fire the hitting coach. I hate for people to lose their job, but someone needs to lose their fucking job, dude, because that's pathetic. It's fucking pathetic. That's kind of all I have to say about the fucking series, man. You guys watched it. Fucking Corbin Carroll stealing second, like, before Michael Grove even threw the ball, dude. I don't care what level. If you've played past, I don't know, being 12 years old, once bases are big enough where you get to lead off, once that happens, you know that if a runner's going, you say, going. Or if you're on the rubber and the runner's going, everyone yells, step off, step off. How the fuck did Carroll get almost to second base and no one said anything? I don't think Dave makes most of the decisions, but I think he's got to be in that locker room and be like, hey, you guys need to fucking get ready. Like, know the situation, this, like, there's no fucking excuse for that. No excuse. And that's kind of on Dave, I think. I don't. If that's not your job to motivate guys, I'm not sure what is, because I know you don't make all the decisions. But, yeah, I don't get it. It's pathetic. It's embarrassing. And I was going to end the podcast anyway. This is the last season anyway. It was always the last. I mean, not always, but I decided a few months ago when I decided to move to Austin that this is going to be the last season. For the same reasons, like, I can't give you the best if I can't stay up late every single night to watch the games. And, you know, maybe I still live here and maybe my mind changes, but as of right now, this is the last podcast. For this podcast, I think what I'll do is, you know, I'll talk about baseball on my other podcast because I still love baseball. And maybe do some Dodger talk. Maybe I'll change the format a little bit to do like a 5-minute segment or something. I don't know. Like, I know I've had a couple baseball guys on the podcast, and I always love those. So maybe I'll do my podcast kind of like Joe Rogan will do a podcast with a comedian, and then do like an MMA one, and have like certain ones designated for just MMA stuff. You know, maybe I'll do something like that for baseball. But yeah, I just can't give it my all anymore, you guys. It's just because of my comedy career. Like, it's I'm still a nobody. I'm still really poor, but it's kind of starting to take off, and it's kind of what I wanted. So that being said, I've loved doing this show. I've loved, you know, just talking about Dodger baseball. I could talk about it forever, and I still will. But also getting to share my passion and my stories from the past with you guys, because really I have great memories of my mom and my grandma, and, you know, I've said it a million times, but like, that's Dodger Stadium is the place where I feel connected to my mom, and it's the only place I can go and feel connected to my mom. So that's always going to be home for me, no matter where I live. My plan is go to Austin for a year or so, try to get in at Rogan's Club and fucking really advance my career that way, and then see what happens. And then I'm almost to the point where I'm just doing comedy and I don't need to make money any other way. I'm close, but I just need to keep getting headline gigs and whatever. But I kind of see myself coming back to LA in a couple years or more, but I think ultimately I do want to be here close to my family, unless they move to Texas, but I'd want to be close to my family. But Austin's calling me. It's been calling me even when I was in Oklahoma, but I wanted to come home. And oddly, the main reason I wanted to come home, I mean, for comedy, but like, because Dodger Stadium is home, dude. Like, the Dodgers are home. This is always going to be home. But Austin's calling me, dude. It is. And I hope you guys that listen to this podcast will go to my other podcast, The Camera Adds 10 Pounds. I don't think anybody that listens to this podcast listens to my NSYNC podcast. So yeah, I'll talk baseball there a little bit. But if you want to support me personally, like, that's probably where you go to listen to content and whatever. You can buy my merch. There's a million ways you can support me other than this podcast, and listening, you know, listen to those podcasts or that podcast, The Camera Adds 10 Pounds, and come to comedy shows when I'm in your city. If you see that I'm in your city, share it so other people that you know can see it and they'll want to come. Ticket sales is big. You know, I don't get paid on ticket sales sometimes. Sometimes I get paid in ticket sales, and then sometimes I just get paid, but if you have good ticket sales, it still looks good. So, like, sharing it so that people can see it, and then maybe they have people that they share it with, and they can see it, and it's just a cycle. You know, that's how stuff goes viral, that's how people see things, and that's how you get growth, organic growth in the within the algorithm. But those are ways you can help. You know, you could always buy merch. I'm usually peddling it on Instagram and Facebook. But yeah, I do want to say, like, to everybody that's listened, whether you just started listening or you've been listening from day one, like, I really appreciate you guys supporting me and listening to this on a weekly basis when I did them. Sometimes I missed weeks, but, you know, 7 years, man, like, I think that's a good run. But I really appreciate you guys. I appreciate some of you guys that I met after having you guys listen to my podcast, which is cool. Somebody I met last weekend in Tampa. So just thank you for all that. Like, it really, you know, whether it's, you know, like, 4 listeners or whether it's like hundreds of listeners, just the fact that you took time out of your day, you know, or several days, you know, depending on how long you listen, like, to listen to me share my blue thoughts, you know. So I appreciate you guys a lot. I really enjoyed doing this. I'm still gonna love the Dodgers. I'm still gonna love baseball, but, you know, just like Kobe knew when to walk away, I'm gonna know when to walk away from this. So for one last time, thank you guys so much for being here along for the ride. If you're in Little Rock, I'm gonna be there this weekend at headlining the Joint Comedy Theater. So yeah, one more time, you guys. New York City, it's cold and it's damp. You better know this part. And all the people dress like monkeys. Let's leave Chicago to the Eskimos. That town's a little bit too rugged for you and me, babe. And this song will still make me cry every time I hear it, because it'll either mean that the Dodgers won, Lakers are about to play, or they won. Or if you're listening to this, you might be listening to this podcast, but no, probably not. This is the last one. I appreciate you guys. Thank you for listening. Peace out. Petey out.